How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It's January 31st, 2012, here at figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com. We are here to talk a bunch of news, the biggest of which is the fact that Undertaker came back last night with a wig on. No. But that is news. That's all people on our board were talking
about it, so it's news.
Yeah. There were some pictures that floated several months ago of Undertaker with a shaved head.
How's he going to work with that?
Well, I think it's growing back, and they figure they put the wig on now, and they're hoping that by Mania time, it's long enough that they can put extensions in or something. That's my guess.
Yeah, I suppose. But what if he doesn't have that much hair now? Because his hair was pretty thin at the end.
I don't know why he shaved it. I mean,
well, he knew he was going to be gone for a while, but I agree with you. But even so, he also knew he was coming back.
Yeah, I've shaved my head many times, and it does not grow shoulder length in 6 months. So,
well, I don't think that he was expecting to grow shoulder length, but he could get extensions.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
he's
how long
back.
Does that be for extensions? I've never had extensions, so I don't know.
Well, there's always a first time for that, Dave.
What?
Extensions.
Extensions?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's talk about this show. I thought it was a pretty good show. There was a very good Daniel Bryan CM Punk match at the top of the hour. They actually didn't put the champion versus champion match as the opener, as we have seen before. But what did you think of the show overall?
I liked the show a lot. I thought I thought the videos, you know, of Rock and Cena. You know, I will say this. Because those videos aired on the show, now I see no reason why they should have aired the night before. If they had not, I would probably have a different opinion. Because the reality is that I like the videos. The Cena one's trying to send the message. It's really clear that Cena's a great guy and that there are people who boo him, but that when you really grow up and think about it, you're not going to boo him because he's such a great guy, and it's not going to work at all. And I understand why they do it because they have to keep him a babyface, and there's reasons for that and all. At the end of the day, no matter how this thing is portrayed, he's getting booed out of that building like nobody's business, and he's getting booed out of every building like nobody's business. So. I mean, except for the house shows when you have the small audience and it's heavily kids. So, but they're doing it. And, we already talked about the Rock thing. I got watching that Rock thing, I don't know. It was really a weird reaction that I had. I mean, it been a positive one. It just kind of like it hit me like, I don't know. He's like been a big star for so long, but it just kind of hit me like, geez. You know, the whole deal with him since childhood and everything. It's like, he has plenty of reasons not to do this. And, that's the thing that people don't really understand. You know, like that whole time when he was gone, he was, I mean, to varying degrees, but he was always following the business. You know, sometimes very close, sometimes not as close, but always knowledgeable and knowing what's going on and keeping in touch and things like that. And, he's turned 40 this year, and he's a big time star, and you know, tons of projects, making tons of money, and the WrestleMania is a big thing. I think this is going to be a real big WrestleMania. I just sense that like there's that once late February comes around, you know, he's going to be everywhere promoting it too. You know, once this once the movie comes out and he's done with the promotion of the movie, which will be. The movie's out February 10th in the U.S. I'm not sure what international stuff he has. The first, his first Raw appearance, I believe, is the 27th of February, and he's going to be pretty much, you know, at least a regular on the Raw shows and stuff from that point on. So anyway, that was that. But I thought that the Orton Ziggler match and the Orton Ziggler match I thought was better than anything at the Royal Rumble. And the Punk Bryan match, you know, it didn't have a good finish, but it's TV, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that finish for a TV match. And they had a very good match as well. And the Undertaker thing at the end, I mean, everyone knew it was coming, but I don't think people knew it was coming that week. The timing of it and all was good. So I expect a big rating coming off the Rumble anyway. So it's in that sense, it's probably a good show to debut Undertaker.
Now, before we go into the review here, just a quick question. They've obviously, as you noted, they've been doing a lot of work trying to get people to not hate John Cena. But, I mean, do they honest to God think that there's like any chance whatsoever that John Cena will not be booed out of the building at WrestleMania? Because I think it's preposterous to even try that. I mean, if you want to not get him booed every week on television, fine. But obviously, I mean, there's nothing you can do.
He's going to get booed every week on television, you know, once Rock comes back. Unless Rock puts him over as a babyface, and if he does, that'll hurt the match.
They'll just boo Rock.
It'll soften Rock. They'll boo when he says, I like John Cena, but I don't see them doing that. I mean, the thing is, if they don't make this match into, big personality conflict, they're sacrificing business. I mean, it should be a lot more hardcore than when he first came back. I mean, they need to, just the idea, it's Rock versus Cena, it's a battle for the ages, match of the century, whatever. I mean, that's all well and good, and it's going to do good business either way. But they really need to get that edge for this match, and that edge, part of it is the rooting interest, and it's okay, it's okay if people boo Cena. It's probably preferable because it's going to create the most heat possible. Cena doesn't have to be a heel to get booed. I mean, that's the thing. I'm not even saying that Cena should go all out heel and anything like that because he doesn't have to. He's going to be a heel to that audience anyway. The idea that he may get some cheers, but ain't going to be many. And they're not going to be. They're going to be drowned out by the booze, no matter what they do. So, unless they foolishly try to turn Rock heel, which will backfire anyway, even if they try, and they won't. So, I think that it's just the idea of trying to make sure that when Rock is gone, that the people don't hate Cena so much, and they can't like get Cena back in that top babyface position afterwards and try to, again, they've been doing this for years, all these things like having, Roddy Piper endorse him and, saving damsels in distress and all of the angles that they've done. They've done everything in the world to try and get people not to boo him. And all of these results wind up with them, booing him more. And it just is what it is.
All right. So the show, it opened up with John Laurinaitis coming out. Happy, fake happy, John Laurinaitis. He shook hands with all the ringside fans and talked about how excited he was to have this review tonight and felt like he'd done a great job. He'd made some mistakes, but he'd also made this the best show that he could and said Hunter was a buddy of his and he was sure that when the night was over, he was still going to be the GM. And in fact, I guess he sort of is. We don't really even know.
I think he is because he wasn't fired.
So
I mean, it's like now you would think that since Hunter was about to say fired when he said you're that backstage he could have done it, but I think in WWE that when you have an interruption of something like that, it means you can't go back to that thing ever again.
So I guess.
So he's like spared forever.
I don't know about forever, but till next Monday.
Yeah, and then they'll probably, who knows what they'll do.
Well, we'll get to Undertaker and Hunter in a second. So he announced some matches, Beth Phoenix versus Eve, Kofi versus Miz, Orton versus Ziggler, and CM Punk versus Daniel Bryan in a champion versus champion match. And then he announced the Elimination Chamber match. We know one, the Raw match is Punk, Ziggler, Kofi, Miz, Truth, and Jericho. And they are, in fact, going to do two Elimination Chambers this year. And
Brian defending in the other one.
That's right. That's going to be announced on SmackDown at the tapings tonight.
Yeah, so we've got to figure Big Show, Mark Henry, right?
Big Show, Henry, Brian,
maybe
Cody.
Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, Cody.
Sheamus, but that would make no sense to put Sheamus in that spot.
Yeah, Sheamus wouldn't be in.
Randy Orton.
Orton.
And somebody else.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Punk came out, and he actually got the entire
maybe
crowd.
Maybe they can put Drew in there.
Please, no. Please, no. So he got the whole crowd to sing goodbye to John Laurinaitis, and they had their little thing back and forth, and Laurinaitis offered a handshake. Punk said, if you offer me that hand, you're probably going to get a GTS. And so out came Daniel Bryan, and at first they argued back and forth. And then Punk said, we've known each other for a decade, and let's just go out here tonight and have the best match in the world here in Kansas City. And they shook hands, And actually, Sheamus was out as well, just to remind everybody that he was going to get a championship match against one or the other at WrestleMania, in theory. And then the two, Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, shook hands, and that was that. So they kind of, for those fans that remember them from ROH and such, they had a moment, and for all the fans who didn't, they probably were wondering, why is Daniel Bryan shaking hands with CM Punk? But they tried to explain it, so there you go.
Yeah.
Orton versus Ziggler.
I did think it was kind of weird in the sense that, you know, I mean, but they did acknowledge that, like, in the locker room thing that you know, and Daniel Bryan was a babyface until just, you know, several weeks ago. And so, you know, it was fine. It was fine for what they did.
Yeah. I did think it was interesting that they hearkened back to each of their ROH careers and that sort of thing. But at the same time, Daniel Bryan never really had anything to say when Punk kept calling himself the best in the world, a catchphrase he blatantly stole from Bryan Danielson in ROH. But I guess you can only go so far. Orton Ziggler had a very good match. Orton's back. I guess from watching this match, I don't know why he was only in for 5 minutes in his hometown last night, because he can go. They had a long match. They had a good match.
I thought really good.
Mm-hmm. Did a bunch of spots, and finally, I guess, Orton actually, you know, he hit his draping DDT, hit his RKO, 1, 2, 3. They did some false finishes, but when he started doing his big major comeback and hitting his big spots, he just finished the guy. So, very good match, and I don't know what's up with Dolph these days, but probably not in the title picture for a while.
Well, he is, because he's in the chamber.
I don't know if I count that as a title picture, because so is Kofi.
But he's in the title picture for a month. And then you know, they'll probably start rehabbing him next week. I think that the idea was that they had to give Orton a win because he didn't win the Rumble. And Dolph is one of these guys where he's like the utility man right now, in the sense that when somebody needs a win on the babyface side, they put him in with Dolph because you're guaranteed not only a win but a good match. And because it's not like the company is not aware that Ziggler is, like, really good. You know, which, I mean, that sometimes happens that someone's really good and they're, like, slow on the draw. And that's not the case here. People have been talking about him for a while. And, you know, they gave him the title match at the Rumble and everything like that. It's just that, you know, they needed to give Punk 4 wins, you know, for whatever reason on Saturday. I don't know why they put him in the Rumble. That served no purpose. Other than, I guess...
Well, the reason they gave him...
that the other Uso wasn't in. Maybe that's the reason.
The reason they gave him 4 wins, I mean, they don't think about things like, oh my God, we beat the guy 4 times. They think about things like, okay, everybody knows that if Punk gets 3 visual pins, they're going to know
losing.
That Dolph Ziggler wins. And then
that's
that as a swerve.
So they did it as a swerve.
So the poor guy got
Dolph
beat 4 times.
Ridiculous in the process, and then coming back and doing the job. But again, like I was saying, I think that they will probably start to rehab him. I mean, I could be so dead wrong on that; it's not even funny. But I'm going to go with that anyway.
It depends on what you mean by rehab. I mean, I don't think here's the thing. When we talked about the Rumble last night and the lack of star power, I look at this Elimination Chamber and Ziggler, Kofi, Miz, Truth, and Jericho. In there with Punk, I just look at it and I go, okay, maybe Chris Jericho wins and then Punk has to win the title back at WrestleMania. But like everybody else in this cage, it's like I don't give them 1% chance of winning. Maybe they'll do another swerve.
No,
but
they put Sheamus over in the Rumble. I would, you know, like I said, it's Vince McMahon. He changes his mind every hour. So the idea that he may at some point on February 19th or whatever the day of that show is, just go, you know what?
We're going to headline Mania with Kofi.
No, it won't be Kofi. You're right. I wouldn't give Kofi 1%. But, I mean, Miz, you know, I doubt it. But I don't rule it out. Jericho, Punk, of course, chance. Dolph. Probably no. But here's the thing, though. It's like, it doesn't matter. This is the one Mania, to me, where that you don't have to lock in, like, who's, like, in other years, like, you lock in your championship and you need those strong championship matches because those are the ones that are going to help sell the show. I mean, this show is going to be Rock and Cena and Undertaker and Triple H, and it's going to do big business. And, you know, whether Jericho wrestles Punk or whether Punk wrestles Ziggler again, even though it makes no sense at this point, if you go with hindsight, or Punk wrestles The Miz, even though we've seen it time and time again, it doesn't matter. It's so far down the cards. That's why, like, yeah, the logical thing is Punk and Jericho. They're already starting in that direction. It's probably where they're going to go. But if they get some idea that, you know, it's too predictable, it's not like it's going to hurt the card or hurt the buy rate. But, you know, they are, you know, I mean, let's face it, they went in there, and it was Jericho who laid out Punk in the match with Brian. So he's the key contender, and that certainly, you know, that was the plan for Mania. I really don't think they're going to change that plan.
We had a deal backstage where John Laurinaitis is going and shaking hands with everybody, and he gets to Regal, and he says, "How's your son?" And Regal explains that, in fact, he has twin daughters, and they're conjoined twins at that.
And Regal actually, I think Regal has a son. In fact, I know he does.
Not in this storyline, he doesn't. And not only does he have conjoined twins, he keeps them locked in the attic, he said. And if anybody else in the entire company had tried to spout this line, it would have been so bad. But William Regal made it the best line of 2012 so far.
It was that.
He was
that
so
interchange
awesome.
Was awesome.
It's so great.
Yeah, yeah. It was.
William Regal
John was
amazing.
Right.
Huh?
John was right.
Yeah.
I think he's got a son.
Brodus Clay beat Tyler Rex quickly. They did the whole entrance. They did the whole deal. Brodus Clay didn't get the reaction he's gotten in the last few weeks. I think people are ready for something else at this point. But
because he was going against Tyler Rex, and it was only a 1 minute match. Everyone could close their eyes and knew every single thing they were going to do. So, although I guess not every single thing
they did mix it up a little,
because Tyler Rex did get a little bit of offense for a second there. But yeah, the dancing still works and everything. So I mean, it's a great you know, it's a spot on the show that everyone's happy to see. It's part of the package. I think that he's very effective.
We had Punk and Brian having a deal backstage, and Punk explained that people don't know what a vegan is. And Brian explained it, and then he said, "Listen, nobody knows what what straight edge means." And then they agreed to have the match. Punk said, "Yeah, well, I'm the best in the world," and Brian muttered something and walked off. I think he said, "We'll see." And off he went. And
well, the thing was is that Punk said that, like, you know, you say you're a role model and I don't. So that's the difference between the two of them.
I see. Mm. Yeah. So they had a match and it was great. They got to do a lot of their old school stuff. It's a different sort of match than you normally see in WWE. And they're doing this match. They're doing all their near falls at the end. They're going nuts. And finally, who should hit the ring but Chris Jericho, which gave Daniel Bryan the win via DQ, which he sold like he had actually won a champion versus champion match via submission clean in the middle, and ended up with Jericho stomping on Punk and then laying him out, giving him the eyeball, but not actually doing a promo, which he actually teased on Twitter that he had something to say on this show, and then he actually had nothing to say unless he did his talking with his feet. And
he gave him a code breaker.
Code breaker, yeah.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
He does need to do a promo next week.
Yeah.
I mean, a good, you know, and a long one, not just a backstage, you know, whatever. Well, I'm sure if he does one, it'll be in the ring. But he definitely needs one next week.
That was a hell of a match, though.
Yeah, really good. Really good.
That was a great match. They had the announcement that Mike Tyson is going into the Hall of Fame and had a lot of video clips from back in the day, and his return, which most people have forgotten, where he actually wrestled on Raw, unannounced.
The thing I thought was, you know, cheesy as hell was they showed, like, this press conference and where he goes, "If I'm not in the Hall of Fame, what kind of a Hall of Fame is it?" Which was obviously talking about boxing and not
sure.
Talking about WWE.
Yes.
And they made it look like, you know, he was talking about WWE, which is pretty cheesy, but...
And Jericho admitted the clip they had on there of Tyson knocking out Jericho. He said that was the scariest moment of his life.
I bet. Seriously.
He had Mike Tyson throwing a punch at him, and he had to take his chances.
Yeah.
It ended up all right. We had Kofi versus Miz, and all of Miz's fake tan from the Royal Rumble apparently stayed on the mat because he was very pale this evening. And they did a match. And Miz took 95% of it, and you know what that means. He got beat. Trouble in Paradise kick. So there you go. I presume, like, They're going to do the old WrestleMania build, which they've done several times, which is, since we have Elimination Chamber coming up with five men, we got to beat all five men before the pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to take turns.
Lovely.
So like, yeah, yeah, they're going to take turns winning and losing.
So there
Other
you
than
go.
Some of them aren't going to take turns, I bet.
We can have, like, you know, Miz come out and beat someone, and then next week Kofi comes out and beats someone, and they all beat someone who's not in the damn chamber, so that you have five winners in the chamber as opposed to five losers.
That's not how they do it, because they...
Why? There's enough men on the roster.
And you know what? Even if there's not, they're the WWE. They could bring anyone in at any time for one... You know what's wrong with bringing a guy in for one night that's, like, out there? You
well,
know?
The answer is nothing's wrong with that.
Yeah.
We had David Otunga saying he had tried to influence the decision of Triple H. And Laurinaitis was not happy about this. He felt this man was trying to usurp him. And
trying to steal his position.
That's right. So we had Beth and Eve. Eve got in the ring and she flipped out, I guess because she's so stressed out. And then she was immediately pinned. So
28-second match.
That sucks for her. So then they did the big deal where Kane appeared on the big screen and he vowed to continue killing Zack Ryder until Cena embraced the hate. He said it was all John Cena's fault. And he said he was going to send a message tonight by coming after Eve. So, of course, he magically appears in the ring. She
From
is
behind.
Yeah,
she couldn't even get out the back door, or the other direction, although she didn't try either.
She's so terrified that she cannot escape a ring. So Kane is about to do whatever Kane does to the ladies, and out comes...
What does he do?
I don't want to know.
I mean, what has he done?
Well, nothing yet. He's Kane should know by now.
He just makes them cry.
He should know by now that when you go after the ladies, John Cena's coming out every time. And that's what happened. Cena came out, and he ran wild, and he pummeled Kane all around ringside, and Kane finally fled and escaped through the crowd. And the whole idea here was, we got to make John Cena like a crazy badass. And he's got to just kill this guy. And he's got to scream that every time you get up, I'm going to knock you down again. Because they're doing a last man standing match at the chamber. And people were cheering. I think they were a little more into Cena than they normally are because of this beating.
Well, because of the nature of how it was put together. And it was, you know, it was a good brawl. And also, the other one is that, you know, very smartly, you know, finally, because they haven't done it in so long, Kane really sold and ran away.
Yeah.
You know, which they, you know, they normally protect Kane from doing that stuff, and it was the right thing at the right time for this feud, especially since they, you know, booed Cena so much the night before.
All right, so we had Laurinaitis coming out for his segment, and he started to explain that I have done a great job. I'm very happy with the job I've done in my position here, and I gave myself a performance assessment, and I've given myself many fives.
All fives.
For excitement, he said, I gave myself a five.
And he also said year after year, the Raw ratings are up.
Year to year, they're up.
Yeah, yeah. Which isn't true, by the way.
That's a lie.
Well, I see he's a heel. He can lie, right?
I guess the performance assessment did not involve telling the truth.
He didn't say honesty?
He didn't say honesty.
He did say he was honest a couple times on the show, at
sure.
least once.
So he lied about ratings, and then finally out came Triple H, and they did their deal back and forth. Hunter explained to him that they actually brought up the storyline. They brought up the storyline of John Laurinaitis, you stole my job. As he's explaining that
he admitted that he had let personal feelings get involved, so he should have been replaced.
Yes, he did. However,
and if you remember when he was dumped, he wasn't all that brokenhearted about it, unlike Vince, you know, who, like, cried and everything.
However, he was removed from his duties as the head of Raw and ended up, after being removed, as the man who outranked the new head of Raw.
I know.
This is beyond idiotic. Anyway... So he finally
and now he can go back to it anytime he wants.
Yeah,
but he doesn't want to.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
So he finally says, "All right, well, you know, Vince McMahon had a club, blah blah blah, and it's the Kiss My Ass Club, which they didn't mention on television. They can't, I guess, and they presume that.
I think they could. I think he just didn't need to.
Maybe he didn't need to, but yeah. There's always new fans. Anyway, Laurinaitis was all ready to do so, and Hunter said, "Are you kidding me?" And didn't make him do it. And he was about to announce his firing when the Undertaker's gong sounded and his wig came out. And he very dramatically came down to the ring, and they kind of tried to do what they did last year of just looking at each other. And Undertaker dramatically looked up at the WrestleMania logo, and he dramatically looked back at Hunter. And I guess the key this year is that Undertaker, after staring at him, Triple H looked at him, and he patted him on the shoulder, and he turned and walked away. So I guess the gimmick is that Hunter is retired, even though he called out Undertaker, and he's thinking about not doing this match this year. And I guess Undertaker's going to have to force him to do it. So maybe next week on the show, Hunter will come out at the end to fire Laurinaitis again, and Undertaker will interrupt, and he'll keep doing this until finally Hunter accepts the challenge. So
no, how does Sean fit in?
Maybe Hunter just walked away because he had to make a phone call.
I'm just wondering how, like, they get, because you know, how they get to Sean as referee.
They got plenty of time.
No, I know they got time. They don't have to do that until, like, you know, a couple weeks out from the show. But I'm just wondering, storyline-wise, man, maybe they have an idea, and even if they don't, they can just say that Sean's Twitter followers told him to do it if they have at last resort.
I would bet you $10 that with Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Undertaker involved in this storyline, it's not going to involve Twitter.
I hope not. You're probably right.
I guarantee
Triple H
this.
Involved, Triple H nicks the Twitter thing.
Yeah. So there you go. That's Raw, everybody.
I'm sure Undertaker wouldn't appreciate it either. I don't know that he would nix it, but you're right.
I don't think Shawn knows what Twitter is. Yeah. So there you go. That is the Raw show. And tonight is a SmackDown taping. We've got Randy Orton versus Wade Barrett in a match. And I don't know what else.
So Wade Barrett, probably the other guy in the chamber.
That's right. So I guess one of them has to beat the other, so we have another loser going into the chamber on the other show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Wade Barrett, you know, Randy Orton's going to be beating everybody for a while.
Yeah. Karma had her baby.
Yeah.
December 31st, I guess, was the date. So she got about a month to recover, and now she's back in the ring. At least she was at the Rumble.
Yeah.
Wasn't there last night. Let's talk about New Japan. They have been sold. And what's the story?
Yeah, they were sold. No one knew this one was coming. All the wrestlers found out yesterday, and were blindsided. Everyone was blindsided. In fact, when I first heard it, made some calls over there, and the people, you know, one person had told me, and then the other people didn't even know about it and said, no, nothing to it. And then like an hour later, it was like, yeah, you were right. They were sold. So the company is Bushiroad, which is a card game company, and they, you know, they take over actually officially tomorrow, and they had a press conference today and kind of talked about, you know, that, you know, we're going to, you know, they're very interested in upping the merchandise availability of New Japan products and of the wrestlers that they're under contract, merchandising the wrestlers more. And the thing that's the most surprising to me, and I was actually shocked, is that the sale price was $6.5 million, which sounds unbelievably low for that company. I mean, like, when you consider, think about this, Strikeforce, the real number Strikeforce went for was $34 million. And, you know, like, I'm not saying that New Japan was bigger than Strikeforce, but it should be. You would think it would be, right? And it wasn't bleeding money like Strikeforce.
Well,
so I don't know what that means. And, you know, the valuation, I mean, you know, it surprised people there that they could get it for. I mean, like, it's one thing, the price of the company when it was sold, you know, years ago, because that company was in really bad shape when Inoki sold it to Yuke's, which is the video game company that owned it. And Bushiroad has promoted some stuff. They were the promoters of the G1 tournament this year, and they promoted. They sponsored some fighters, and they sponsored some 0-1 shows, and they promoted their own shows. And the president of the company is like a big time pro wrestling fan. You know, grew up with Inoki. When they ran their own show, he played a character in a house show. So that's already maybe troubling to me. He said they were going to take on and surpass the WWE, which also scared me. They were going
to. That's good to have goals.
What?
It's good to have goals.
It's good to have a goal, but I wouldn't have even said that. Said that they were going to expand New Japan, which also scared me because, you know, expand them internationally, because reality is that Japanese wrestling does not export well. It never has. I mean, American wrestling has. It's always been the advantage. No matter how good Japanese wrestling might be, it's a cultural thing. You know, it's like, you know, what from Japan has you know, ever, you know, American stuff, you know, you can go to Europe and get American stuff everywhere. You know, you can go to Japan and get American stuff everywhere, right? I mean, you know, American stars, you know, can go all over the world and perform, you know, but I'm not just talking about wrestlers, but entertainers. And what Japanese entertainer, you know, can come, you know, anywhere, I suppose maybe China or Korea, and even then not necessarily so big, you know, can, you know, what Japanese entertainer can come to the United States? I mean, they can come and maybe perform at a small level, but I mean, be a big time level thing. It's just, it's not happening. You know, and the idea of trying to expand, you know, New Japan into this country, it's just, no matter how good the wrestling is, it's not, you know, it's going to be like, you know, drawing a couple hundred people, and then it's not worth the expense. You know, you lose money on the deal, probably, or at best, break even. It's not something you're going to, like, expand your company with you know, overseas and, you know, getting a lot of, you know, they could get some television overseas. They have had TV in Europe before, you know, but it was, again, even their TV in Europe was American voiceover stuff. It wasn't, you know, the Japanese, you know, thing and all that. And you know, focused on, you know, they had the Japanese on, but when they did the American TV in Europe years and years ago, what was it, the Ring Warriors, I think was the name of the show, you know, they focused on the American talent that worked there, you know, more than, and doing clips of that as opposed to doing, like, straight New Japan shows, especially now with New Japan being so Japanese-oriented as far as star power. I mean, you've got, you know, Giant Bernard and MVP and some guys that you know, were in WWE and all that, and they are on the cards, but it's not like, you know, 15 years ago or 25 years ago when if you put those tapes and you had, you know, 15 years ago, you at least had, you know, some, you know, a lot more, you had more American stars. And 25 years ago when they were, like, big in Italy, I mean, you had, you know, Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, and Adonis and Superstar, and, you know, you had better wrestlers than the American promotions did, better Americans by far. So, you know, as far as marketability-wise, so, you know, again, that expansion, I don't know, but the Japanese wrestlers were happy once they heard from the guy when it first happened. They were just all caught stunned. The thing that I found was so interesting is how quiet that this thing was kept, because you know, these type of the Bushiroad people approached them over the summer, probably, I'm guessing, right after the G1 or maybe during the G1, something like that, and said, you know, we want to buy the company. And at first Yuke's was like, well, we're not interested in selling. And then they came back with, well, we are. And then the negotiation went pretty quickly from there. And so that's the deal. They said, he didn't say business as usual, but they sort of did. And that scared me too. You know, but you know, they're you know, you got an owner who is a big time wrestling fan. He wants to expand the business. Does he, you know, do they know what to do? You know, I mean, they'll probably keep a lot of the same officers. That was the theory people had. But, you know, when new people own, somehow or other, usually that doesn't stay the case for the long term. Usually they put their own people in and they, you know, want to make decisions and things like that. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see if it's good or bad in the long run. But the wrestlers think that, you know, that they will be able, they were given the impression that with the merchandise money and with this new company putting, you know, more effort into it, that their salaries would be up, or at least they would be able to make more money. So it was viewed, you know, at least as far as a couple of the last few hours, it has been viewed as a positive. You know, you have to, it's wait and see when you got new owners. I mean, the Yuke's people, it was, I don't know that they ever were looking at expanding the company. It was just something that they owned the video game rights to, and they got it at a really cheap price. You know, the company was probably going to, I don't know about go under, but, you know, I mean, they were on the verge of going under when they were sold. So it was like a fire. They got it as a fire sale. This was not This was not a fire sale, but $6.5 million for that company still sounds like a fire sale to me. I mean, because they're, it's not like they're, you know, like WCW where you're just buying a bunch of trademarks for a company that's out of business. I mean, they are in business. They're, they have a fan base. They're doing reasonably well. The Tokyo Dome show was a good show, and with a better crowd than they've had in a couple of years. You know, they don't have a lot of TV money compared to the past, and, you know, the house shows are so-so. You know, rank and file shows are very much so-so, not anything special. But it's not the dying company it was when you picked them up either.
Now, what is the update on the Fox ratings?
The West Coast, you know, adding the West Coast did not make a big difference. It's I don't have everything in front of me. I should have it soon, but it looks like the final number was a final number. The final number pre-DV, you know, figuring for the first week DVR usage, which for the first show was actually pretty high for a live sporting event. But it looks like a 2.6 rating. We had 2.7 up yesterday. Looks like 2.6 is going to be the number. 4.7 million viewers. It's not. It's down more than like the fast or the overnights that we talked about on Sunday would have indicated. So it is not as successful as it looked like it was going to be, partially because the West Coast numbers were not very big, which has to do with airing 5 to 7. You know, it's an interesting. Fox is treating this like live sport. And that's just what you do with live. When you do have a live sporting event, you go live. That's just what you do.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because I have Comcast and it did not air 5 to 7.
Yeah, well, Seattle was different. I mean, it's not Comcast. It's maybe your local station in Seattle decided that we're gonna do the ratings and screw the Fox Network, you know, national directive. Because here in L.A. and everywhere, it aired 5 to 7. You probably got, you know, Seattle probably did a better rating because of it. So that's, you know. Because, I mean, the thing is, a lot of people don't. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, it's just this is what you do with entertainment, and this is what you do with sports. When CBS did this stuff, CBS considered it entertainment, which some people thought was bad, and they delayed it for 3 hours, and some people thought, oh, it's horrible, it's going to kill the rating. But the fact is, it helps the rating. I mean, people, you know, don't realize that, like, yes, you can go on, you know, you can go on the Internet and get all the results, and there are people who will do that, and there are people who will be less interested because of it. That is the vast, vast, vast minority of people who are going to watch that show. Most people watch television, you know, are not running on. It's like it's not realizing what your big audience is. And I'm not saying that they should tape delay it for the West Coast. I'm glad they don't. And for me, because it was annoying to watch the CBS thing 3 hours late. But if they're looking for the highest ratings possible, that would be what they would do. I don't know if they will make that change. They probably won't, because that's how they do sports. But that's why, you know, that's why the West Coast. Which, you know, the thing is with MMA, is that the West Coast numbers are generally, you know, when you look at those things, we have them like the best pay-per-view markets. You know, it's San Diego's usually very good, LA's usually very good, San Francisco has really come on lately, Seattle very good, one of the best, Portland usually okay. I mean, those markets are much stronger than your East Coast markets when it comes to pay-per-view, and most likely would be the same for ratings, and they're not. I mean, LA did a 2.2 rating, or 2.3. I've seen both numbers. I'm not sure what, you know. But that tells the story right there of why the West Coast didn't come in big. And the other difference with the West Coast from the first show is that even at 6 to 7, which is not as bad as 5 to 7, but you also had Cain Velasquez, you know, as the featured performer on that first show, and that drew a lot of Hispanics who are based on the Southwest, your Phoenix, your Los Angeles, San Diego, San Jose, San Francisco, Stockton, whatever, Sacramento. Those markets, you know, came in big because of Cain, and you didn't have Cain, and I haven't even gotten a Hispanic rating for the Deportes number, but I'm sure that's. There's a reason that I haven't gotten that, because I'm sure it's way, way down. And it speaks to the fact that Cain was a, you know, of all people, you know, I mean, people when, like, I like when this thing went down with the first one, people go, you know, well, Cain, no charisma, Cain, this and that. And it's true. Cain, Cain has no charisma, but he has drawing power, or he had. And I don't know that he, I don't know that he will have that drawing power as not world heavyweight champion. Maybe he will going for the title. Maybe he'll never get a shot to go for the title and he'll lose again. We don't know. But he did have it. He did make a difference. The Hispanic ratings for that first show were huge. The first show on Fox was, except for football, for Sunday Night Football, it was the highest or the most watched Hispanic show on English language show of that week, of any programming. So that tells you something right there. And this one, I'm guessing, will not be top 10 at all because there was no Hispanic appealing thing. So that's another reason why the West Coast didn't come in as strong for this one. So anyway, that's the deal. The number, it's good enough. It's not a failure. It's not a big success. It is, you know, decline's not good. And it's also with three fights as opposed to 1 minute of fighting. So the decline, while it looks like it's from a 3-1 to a 2-6, that's what the number says, really, it's like that show, if Kane and Junior would have had a 3-round fight or a 4-round fight, and they probably would have been up to somewhere between a 3-6 and a 4. I think I figured most likely a 3-round fight would have ended them up with a 3-9. So a 3-9 to a 2-6, that is a big drop. Now, again, you know, I went from the mentality that they pretty much were home free. I don't say that they're home free, but it was not a failure, and it did show that they don't need to give away a championship match. It also showed that the difference between a championship match and a regular card without a championship match is pretty substantial. But if they can do, if they do between 2-5 and 3-0, because they do good in the demo, they did 3-2s in males 18 to 34 and 3-2 in 35 to 49 both, and those are good numbers, especially the 18 to 34 numbers, very good, then they're fine. They're fine with this one. If they drop again in the third one, they're not as fine. So they can't, put it this way, they can't put on a weaker show, and, we'll see. We'll see. It's the long, I would say, you know, I cannot say long term that they are solid, but the rating was still fine for this show. It's okay, but the jury is still out.
All right, one last thing here before we go. I want to talk about Diaz and St. Pierre, and what is going to happen if Diaz wins his fight with Condit.
Well, Cesar Gracie said yesterday to Ariel Helwani on his MMA show that if Diaz wins, then he will not fight an interim fight. He will wait for George, whether it's November or earlier. George has said November. Dana White has said the summer. I think the summer is really pushing it. I don't care what, you know, the fact that he can train some now and everything like that, and he's recovering fast. I just don't see George fighting on a torn, you know, coming back on a torn ACL for a fight that quick. It's asking for trouble, and he doesn't need the money. So I'm thinking that, you know, maybe late October, early November, but Nick's not going to do a fight like on May 5th unless they throw tons of money. I guess if they throw tons of money at him, you can never say never. But this from Nick's standpoint, I mean, risking that fight, you know, like let's just say Jake Ellenberger walks through Diego Sanchez on Feb 15, and they go, Nick, let's fight Jake Ellenberger, and you know, what's the value in risking the St. Pierre fight to fight Jake Ellenberger in a interim championship defense where, you know, yeah, he can make some money. He can headline a pay-per-view with it, but it's going to headline a pay-per-view that's going to do, what, 300 maybe, as opposed to one that's going to do, you know, risking one that's going to do whatever the number is going to be. I think it'll be 800 maybe, and maybe more. Who knows? I mean, we'll see.
Should also note that starting on February 27th, Rock is going to be on nearly every single Raw show from that point forward. And if we presume that some of the shows he will appear on tape, he's probably going to be on every single show until WrestleMania.
Oh, in some form, I'm sure. I'm sure that, you know. It, certainly, though, the only one that he's not booked on right now is March 19th. And that doesn't mean that he won't be booked on March 19th. It just that it hasn't been announced yet. And if he's not there, I would think almost for sure. Because it's not like he's not, I don't believe he's doing anything. Like, you know, like he doesn't have to promote the movie. He's doing that right now. He's not starting another movie until after WrestleMania, I believe. I'm pretty sure of that, because he's got some in the can already. So, you know, he's basically got that period where it's going to be, you know, he's going to be, you know, I don't want to say he's not going to go to house shows, but he's going to be a regular character on Raw leading up to this match and full bore WWE. So, you know, yeah, I would expect him to have good presence. It's going to be interesting what they do, you know, because, you know, you can do the interview so many times, but I think that they're going to have to do physical angles back and forth between the two of them.
All I know is I hope they've got some good ideas.
I know. They didn't for Survivor Series.
No.
And that's a scary thing because, you know, and I hope the ideas aren't to, you know, try to, you know, make it, you know, make John Cena equal to him as a babyface.
Well,
yeah, it doesn't matter even if they
try.
I'll tell
you about that, but I think they're going to try something. We shall see.
Team Jacob against whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up, but we're going to be back tomorrow night with more. Lots of stuff to talk about. We'll have new observers, figure fours, back issues. Everything's going to be up on the front page, so check it out. And we'll talk to you again after a while.